Mark Lang is Executive Director of UW Extension's Division of Entrepreneurship and Economic Development. He recently told the UW Regents the explosion of startup small businesses in Wisconsin offers a system a chance to help those small businesses succeed. Mr. Lang, welcome to Wisconsin High.
Thank you.
Well, I found your presentation fascinating because you talked about an explosion of self-employment and stage one, which is 2 to 9. But before we get to those, which is the heart of it, let's take a look at what you presented about the shifting U.S. economy. Let's go to our first graphic.
Yeah.
Can you kind of walk us through this? You also presented this to the Regents, but let's go down the categories and what you see in it.
So remember, while this is all happening, we're watching the headlines of a housing crash and the banking crisis and 9/11 and all these other things going on.
Yes.
And you kind of go, wait a minute, look around behind us and see what's happening to our economy. And I showed them, it's not on this chart, but I showed them three different graphs, all starting around 2000, that are just trending downward.
Mm-hmm.
And these numbers kind of represent that. So it's fascinating to think about the average number of jobs per business establishment. That just takes all business establishments and divides it by all jobs related to those and divides it into it.
And in one decade, it's off 37%.
Yeah, it went from 11.9 in the U.S. to 7.4.
Why?
I think jobs as the metric of business activity are changing. So businesses are hiring. There's some good reasons and bad reasons. Increase in productivity, mm-hmm. offshore production, mm-hmm. Technology. We're getting much better at doing things, so we don't need as many people to do what we do. Mm-hmm. But also those things I mentioned, you know, the budget deficit, the housing crisis, the banking crisis, all wars, election cycles, all those types of things happen to that. But to see the average size go down the way it is stunning. I mean, really kind of to stop and take a look at it. Well, then I think we need to recognize that that's happening and then begin to look closer at it, because I think the inside-out approach of working with our economy is probably better than the outside-in, saying that we need to kind of go inside of our economy and better understand what's going on in there in order to serve it.
Okay. Well, let's look at the next category.
Yeah.
Average number of employees per public employee was off 35%. That's in keeping with your first stat.
So the big companies are getting smaller. So
yes.
They have 4,900 employees on average per company and 32 in 2010. And yet when you look at the total number of employees, it went from 25 million who worked for public companies mm-hmm. to 20 million. So it dropped. So that just says that large companies, you know, are kind of becoming more efficient. They're scaling down. But when you lose that scale up of those large companies, you lose a lot in your economy. You lose a lot of capital, a lot of labor, a lot of strong jobs, a lot of benefits, those types of things. And so the scale down of our economy is a little frightening. So we need to understand what's happening with that and how do we either rebuild it or adjust to those changes.
Right.
But I think these kind of things happen without us really being aware of it.
And the nationally number of startups from 870,000 to 2.2 million, almost a third increase.
Yeah. So here we've gotten really good at helping companies. Yeah, we've gotten really good at helping companies to start.
Yeah.
But I think it's time that we need to figure out how do we help companies to grow. Because I think we've gotten really good. You've got startup weekends. You've got every university and every state have all kinds of activities, which I endorse, and I think we should continue to do that. I'm not suggesting at all.
You've got these mentor programs where retired executives come up alongside, things
all
like
kind.
That.
We've figured out every conceivable way to help people start companies. But then, for some reason, we just assume that the market takes over and they either survive. And if you kind of watch the trajectory of those companies, you know, that's part of the problem is if you just watch the start of a race, you don't understand what happens at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that not very many of those companies make it 5 years, or what percentage of them make it 5 years, and what percentage of them add employees, what percentage of them stay the way they are, why do they go, that's where it gets fascinating to kind of really look inside the economy.
Right.
But for some reason, the number of establishments. So yeah, you can see the average size of a startup went. So the number of employees who were at a sole proprietor startup, 4.7. And in 2010, 2.0.
Two. Wow.
Yeah. But that's probably a lot to do with technology, probably a lot to do with just the skilled workforce being able to kind of spread across those types of businesses.
Okay.
Now the next one is what's really fascinating is this idea of just the number of establishments went from 11.3 million to 19.7, almost double the number of establishments.
This is all types of businesses, right?
This
all types of products,
services.
I should say,
it's every business that has a DUNS number. So where this data comes from is from an economist who looked at DUNS doing a business census every year mm-hmm. and said, you know, if someone looked at those and tied those numbers together year to year to year to know did that company increase or decrease, did it move in or move out, did it expand or contract, and follow that every year, that's what this data is coming from. So it, and people have DUNS numbers who don't even know about it. So their computers are out scouring information. So once someone kind of files for a business loan, tries to get a credit check because they're doing business with another business, goes to the county clerk's office and files a DBA to doing a business, DUNS goes, the computer says, there's business going on at here. Let's give them a DUNS number. So what this data does is now follow that DUNS number. So this is a very non-traditional data set, and it's very expensive to maintain and build, but this Harvard economist figured this out. I got tied up with him about 7 or 8 years ago, and I bought into this database and said, this is like running this magnifying glass across the economy.
Across the U.S. economy.
You can look inside of this like never before. So that's kind of where these came from.
And then you broke out into two eras. So let's focus once on the first era. Let's take 1995 through 2003, excuse me, both for United States and Wisconsin. And I want to ask you about any significance that you see looking at the United States, 23% bump up in stage one jobs, only about one third of that in Wisconsin. Any thoughts on what may have happened there?
Represent what this shows. This comes from a free website called youreconomy.org, and anybody can go on this website and look at these statistics. And what this does is breaks down all those DUNS numbers into business sizes. So this is self-employed is one. Stage one is 2 to 9.
Yep.
Stage two is 10 to 99. Stage three is 100 to 499. And stage four is any company over 500 employees. Okay. So what you're looking at here is the contribution of job growth by each of those business sizes. Okay? So what we're seeing here in the United States is that already between 1995 and 2003, you can see the impact of stage four companies, those large ones. They've been getting smaller and having less, they're not adding jobs, they're shedding jobs.
Right.
Then you look at what you see here is this is the in a, what I would consider a time of a good economy.
Yes.
The job growth during that period was about
15%. Right, we had 9/11, but in terms of the economy, continued to
grow.
Yeah,
it was kind of it's taking advantage of those late 90s that were really booming, and then we did recover a little bit after 9/11.
Silicon Valley bust in 2001, 2002, wasn't there?
Right, but it did pick up again.
Rebound.
So this is nice because it is an 8-year period. There's 16 years in this database on this website, but this then tracks that first year, which is mostly growth. So what happens when you have good contribution from most all size of businesses? Job growth looks pretty good. Okay.
Yep.
On the flip side, when you go look at let's look at Wisconsin, because Wisconsin, interestingly enough, and you pointed this out, and when you asked this, I really hadn't had a chance to look at this, but why did Wisconsin have such a smaller contribution in stage one? Well, it's because it's probably got a lot more in stage three and a lot more in stage four.
Right.
So it's still hanging on to some of those large companies, over 500 employee jobs.
Which reminds me, Wisconsin is either one or two, and the other state is the state of Indiana, for the number of manufacturing jobs.
Yeah.
So aren't those traditionally larger employers?
They are.
Okay.
I think Indiana and Wisconsin are probably known as what we call mid-sized business states.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is some stability in that, mm-hmm. and some then, but also then that job thing moves around. But I think that's why you're seeing that maybe the job growth wasn't quite as strong, because that job growth probably occurs in that stage one and that second stage.
Okay. And one other thing while we're on this graphic, 1995 to 2003, I was just intrigued. Nationally, zero in the stage four, which is 500, and yet Wisconsin grew by 11.5%.
Well, so that was the contribution that group had. So there was still some growth going on in there, and I would guess some of that might have been Epic.
You might see
a lot of that going on with Epic.
Thank you.
What's
very
cool
much.
About this
just
is
exploded.
At some point you can kind of go in and look at some of these companies and see who those companies are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now the reason that I really am glad you came in was this next graphic, because it shows U.S. and Wisconsin growth in the window of 2004 through 2012. The number, 72% growth, Wisconsin, stage one. Tell me about that. Is that a good thing? Does that surprise you?
It's not surprising. It's one of those things where you have to be careful what you ask for. Okay, so we talk about the strength of small businesses and how important they are. Well, look what happens to the overall job growth when almost all the job growth happens in that small company.
Yes.
Very little.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Stage one, 2 to 9
so
jobs.
So I think there's a couple things going on here. What I think this most represents is job shifts from larger companies down to that stage one self-employed, and those represent what I would think would be independent contractors a lot. So forced entrepreneurship. So here we talk about the importance of small businesses, but a lot of times people are forced because, and the economist that helped build this, he calls this the Cisco effect. The Cisco engineers work for the big company hits a little bit of rough patch, they lay off employees.
Yes.
That person goes out, hangs up a shingle, starts doing what he or she does for four or five other companies. Some of them take off and really love that, enjoy that, but the others wait for that next call to come from that big company and go in. So this is kind of this idea of maybe somewhat forced entrepreneurship. That, so we saw that double of establishments growing, the number of establishments really increasing here. So
yes.
Fascinating. I think the other issue here is that when you look at these five companies, if in fact you think in a perfect economy when everybody's contributing, so self-employed a little bit, stage one, most jobs in most economies, if you look at the composition of where the jobs are in stage two, just because almost mathematically, it's mm-hmm. that 10 to 99 category.
Yep.
So almost a lot of businesses, so that's kind of the pinnacle. So, and this stunned me when I saw
zero.
That. We had zero growth in there.
Zero growth in stage two.
Here's the other thing I think that's going on. Look at stage
three.
Don't
you want a healthy pyramid here?
You do. But I think that may be the old norm. The new norm might be switching. You know, that we have to begin to watch this. When you look back probably over cycles, you would see good contribution for big companies and small companies and then those one in the middle, that pyramid. But that may not be the new norm. We may be moving into an era where more small businesses and knowledge-based businesses are taking over, and people are able to run those enterprises with smaller businesses, and they're running them by hiring independent contractors. They're not hiring FTEs.
This 72% increase, Wisconsin, 2004-2012, still intrigues me. I got to probe this a little bit more.
Before you do that, though, I want to ask one other thing.
Please
here.
Do.
Point out. Look at that stage three. That stage three, I think, represents interesting stability in healthcare and education and maybe some government. So they did move out of that stage four. The growth wasn't happening here. But that I was interested in the fact that that's pretty comparable in both the U.S. and in Wisconsin and stayed somewhat stable. That really surprised me. It concerns me more that stage two is low in both of those.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really looked at that. So what you're seeing is just these smaller companies. So what the reason stage one is getting bigger mm-hmm. is that companies are going from stage two into stage one. So they're migrating
slowly
down.
Slowly hiring.
They're migrating down.
Oh, down. Okay? Down.
Well, so what you're seeing is companies, bigger companies, who no longer have 100 employees, they drop below that. So they move into the stage two category.
Wow.
And then they may grow a little bit in there. And then some of the smaller ones may be adding sizes in there. I think the average size of a stage two company is about 25 employees. And between this period and this other period we talked about, it didn't change. It was 25.7, both periods. And yet it didn't add jobs in those. And so now we can start talking about that stage one.
Now let's talk about the 72% bump in stage one. Men, women starting them, what age bracket? Do you have any demographic feel for this?
I can share with you demographics that I've been reading about, not necessarily from this database, but they say that women-owned and women-started companies are increasing, and probably, I don't know if they're the majority, but they're growing at a faster rate, and they're showing up more in this data. And also immigrants coming to this country and starting companies are having a more of an impact in here.
So what about regionally? Would you expect most of these stage ones to be located on the fringes or in Wisconsin's largest cities, or is it universal across the state, including rural areas?
It turns out high growth companies are across every geographical region. You can find really high growth companies in every single county in the U.S. And they also, according to the statistics and the data that some of the researchers have been using this, say that it isn't about the industry at all. It's across all industries. In one really interesting case, in one state, the researcher said, you pick your 10 best, sexiest industry clusters you would pick. Mm-hmm. And then let's go find the 1% fastest, highest growth companies. And they did. And guess how many of those high growth companies fit into those? They gave them 10. Guess how many of those high growth companies fit into those clusters? 15%.
15.
So it's not about which industry they're in. So it's not about picking losers or winners by supporting industry, which I think you still should do, just like you should, you know, support moving companies in and out and attracting companies, but you should have kind of a balanced portfolio. You should grow from within and go find companies to move. You should have a balanced approach in all of this.
What type of services or products are these self-employed and stage one companies? Maybe you could give us an example of each one.
So I'm guessing there's probably, in the stage one in particular, there's a good share of services businesses. So maybe a technology, computer, graphic design, those types of things, where there may be two or three. The other reason this data shows up this way is that this data tracks what we call non-employers. So non-employers are those companies who you and I go into business, and we start a business, we get an LLC, we get an identification number. We never hire any employees.
It's just you and I.
So we're not filing unemployment insurance
taxes.
That's
right, because we are a LLC, you and I, we're breaking our butt.
Right.
7 to 8 every day, right?
Yeah, and in the census data and the federal data, you know what we show up as have employees? Zero. You know what we show up in this data as? 2.
Stage one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And so even if there's 3 or 4 of us, so until we hire an employee and file unemployment insurance taxes, we won't show up. Now, they do collect that every 5 years at the census. So that's why this data is beginning to show this, that you wouldn't really see this, because now most traditional data that talk about job increases and so forth is just tracking estimates and that from unemployment tax reports. And of course, then it's not, you don't look at every one of them. You look at a few and then extrapolate out percentages. So that's why this is kind of astonishing to see, because you're kind of seeing this activity of these DUNS numbers that you don't normally track across time.
So we are seeing people in Wisconsin and nationally start their own businesses for a number of reasons. They've been downsized. But what about the old idea you should follow your heart and your passion? Is that still a good edict? If you think you're good at photography, even though everybody's a photographer now with the state-of-the-art cameras, is it still good to, quote, follow your heart?
Well, I'll encourage you to say yes, but I think the economic cycles and people's temperaments and ability to handle risk and to handle the unknown will dictate that for them. But the ability to kind of have a passion and to be able to have a variety of ways to pursue that passion economically and create revenue from that is just growing exponentially because of technology and the internet.
But you can't decide, okay, I just got downsized, tomorrow I'm going to open up my own professional photography shop. You've got to have some clients or customers in the pipeline, don't you?
Sure. You have to have, or you have to create something new that help attract people to you. I think I mentioned just before the show the concept that's really pushing now into this whole startup phase called Lean Startup. And Lean Startup says before you launch a company, rather than kind of, if it's a traditional company, if it's a coffee shop or a restaurant or a traditional shop or cleaners and something, we know that business model. So you should do a business plan like other people have done and be able to demonstrate financially how that's going to go.
Where do you get enough information and advice to do your own business plan?
Well, there's a lot of resources. You can go to the public library. You can go online and Google. Okay. You could Google a business plan for dry cleaners, and they would probably pop up a model and give you some software to do it and a whole number of other things.
Okay, thank you.
So business planning is important when you know the model. But if you've got an idea that still has some innovation in front of it and you're not sure what the need is, you should spend more time talking to the potential customers. And so this is this whole lean concept that says spend time with your customers, because you might even change your idea. We're doing this now with scientists who have ideas before the National Science Foundation, when they're now running their scientists who are trying to commercialize their technologies, saying, before you really dip too far into learning more about that technology or that science, let's go talk about the people who would talk to the people who would use it, because maybe what you learn from them will change even how you're designing it or what you're building for it. So that whole mentality of talking to the customers is kind of, it makes sense, but it's something new that's kind of hit this whole thing. So we're seeing this now at undergraduate level for businesses and even for larger companies to begin thinking about that.
Do you have any, is there an average amount of someone would invest to start his or her own business?
No.
It's all over the
board. Yeah.
And where do you think some of these stage one startup business executives got their money? Are they cashing in their retirement funds?
Some of them are.
And if you're in your 40s, is that a good thing to do?
You know, it's the old mantra is changing. So jobs and how long you keep a job and how much, how many times you move to jobs is not near as dangerous as it was before. People don't judge you by the number of jobs you have anymore.
Okay.
I mean, as a matter of fact, you know, companies can flame up and flame out, and young folks might say, that's fine, that company's done, we'll go to the next one. But for that person who's 40, you know, taking that leap, I mean, first of all, that life cycle of that job of that person might go to 70, 75.
Yep.
You know, that may not be ending at 55 or 60. And the options that that person has to do things on their own or to kind of work for a number of other companies as an independent contractor increasing. So, but they're getting their money either from their credit card, from their mortgage, from their equity in their house, from their friends and family, or by partnering with other people and combining them.
What about the traditional sources of loans, banks and the SBA? Are those still working anymore?
They are.
Give them
banks
the new
are almost always traditional until you have a business model and you have assets that the bank can use to kind of cover your loan. They'll do a debt financing with you. And the SBA is doing a great job of kind of finding these companies, being more flexible at interacting with these companies at different levels of their growth to provide financing.
Is it generally more encouraging for people that want to start their own businesses than 10 or 15 years ago?
Yeah.
Are there more victory stories?
I think there are.
Stories.
They're not maybe
success?
Not the big blow-ups, the big blowouts like we see,
right.
But just look at the number of establishments. And then start tracking how long those establishments survive, and I think we're starting to see that. The new story is, how can educators and the education system get more involved in that? Because I think innovation and information about strategic intelligence and about markets is kind of the next new frontier of how we interact with these companies and help them to grow.
What are the downsides? Number one, starting a stage one business, you've taken it to stage one. Do you reach a point where you just can't work 70, 80 hours a week anymore? The toll is too great on you and your family?
Yeah.
What are the biggest reasons these babies fail, stage ones?
A couple reasons. They can grow right out of cash. So even though they're growing, they're not managing how they're using that money and managing that growth. And so while they may have customers, they're not having cash and can't sustain that type of growth.
Okay.
The other, as the entrepreneur, they have the passion for this idea and building the idea, but building the company is a whole other thing.
Yes.
And so letting go at the right time when it's time to say, all right, I've kind of played this out. I love what I'm doing, but I don't want to have to. And some people put that on number, you know, 10 employees, too many, 20 employees, 50 employees, we get to 100. Man, I've got a high. So being able to recognize when you need to shift from an entrepreneurial management style to mm-hmm. a professional management style is critical. For companies to do, and there's some really good books out there that show these red flags at each of these levels. When these things start happening to you and to your company and to your employees, it's time to think about another way to think. Now, some people can move right on with them and can say, I'll take that responsibility, I'll learn that. And some of them very early on will say, gosh, I don't want to even add any employees. Or can I hire someone who really knows how to hire employees and run companies? I want to stay over here with my idea.
Creating ideas.
Yeah.
Generating ideas.
Yeah.
What percentage of these stage one companies that have grown so tremendously are still around in, well, what's the normal criteria? 18 months, 24 months?
You know, there is no normal anymore.
You're right. There's no normal anymore.
I think, you know, I actually think 60% of those companies are probably around 5 years later.
Doing better and eventually growing?
Yeah, now in this, or just stagnant and kind of maintaining that level of growth at a pretty level. So it is interesting, and I think one of the things we'll be doing is starting to follow the survivability of these companies.
Mm-hmm.
And then often people talk about young companies being the ones that are growing right now, but I think that it's not the age of the company, it's the attitude of the leaders and the company at the time, and are they innovating new to kind of find new information, to build new markets, to increase market share, to add new products, those types of things. That can happen when a new CEO comes in, that can happen when the company shifts from selling in the auto industry to over here into the healthcare industry. You know, a lot of different things happen. So.
Looking out into the future, what do you think are going to be the opportunities for those who are willing to take the risk and start a small business 10 and 20 years out, Mark?
I think there's going to be a lot more. You just kind of look at what's happened with information and the boom of we thought the internet was great. Well, what we've seen is that it's not the internet so much that's great. It's how people interact with the internet and talk to each other and add their own content to the internet, Twitter and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of think, gosh, 20 years out, that's a long time to think about.
10.
But even that, so what I see is that the opportunities to interact with more markets globally, with more markets technologically, with more people who are interested in doing business together with each other, with other companies, the flexibility to kind of move around and adjust as you learn things to develop mm-hmm. those markets, and the attitude about financing institutions and economic developers and educators to support that kind of a lifestyle is kind of where we have to go. And I think when that happens, then that economy completely shifts. Maybe this continues to go down to where we're at 5 employees per company, and we have 3 times as many establishments, but they're all doing business in different ways than they have in the past. Or maybe we hit another cycle where larger companies build back up. People get more comfortable getting back into those larger companies. We find new niches that they can kind of increase productivity. We get into manufacturing sectors where, you know, all those different things can happen.
So it's good that there are no rules anymore, well, that everybody creates?
I can't see them. I can't see what's happening. What's going to happen in the future. I just know that dramatic shift in the last 10 years.
Yep.
And then I think we need to live more in what's going on in our economy right now than what it used to be, which is why it's important to look at these kind of things.
Okay, you were asked to make your presentation of the Regents for a reason. You see this as a tremendous opportunity for the UW system and the extension. Why?
So I think there's a role both for education, higher ed, and economic development to play a new role with these kinds of companies. And I think, so already education and the system does a great number of things. Research and technology and research and development, workforce, adding workforce, continuing education, executive education, small business development. But the new frontier for growth for these companies is learning more and learning new ways to achieve markets, mm-hmm. to build markets, particularly external markets, away from where they exist, because that's where all the competition is. That's where the biggest potential for growth is.
When you say external, do you mean foreign markets?
I just mean markets outside of the state.
Okay.
For instance, and then so they either going to compete regionally, nationally, or globally, but understanding how to compete in that, understanding who the competitors are, how do I find new market share, what other opportunities are there in that market, because those markets are huge, but that's not to, and so strategic intelligence is kind of the next, I think, one of the ways to really help those companies continue to innovate. We've seen that companies that grow a little bit each year, incremental growth, have a pattern of growth, and then project to be really high growth companies if they can do that over a period of time, rather than companies who have some kind of lucky thing. They hit a market, hit a spike, and then they kind of live off of that, and then they don't continue to grow. They kind of fade away. And so education can actually be a part of that. And I think it's time for education to step in and say, maybe we should begin looking at serving these smaller, high potential companies and understanding what things we can do with information. So incentivizing faculty to be more involved with those kind of companies. How do we do that? Because right now, they're incentivized more for research than they are for interacting with those kinds of companies.
Well, if a woman starts a business on a main street in Wausau and it's growing slowly, she doesn't have time to go to enroll in the UW class.
Oh, no. Yeah, and that's not at all what I'm suggesting. Engage with her. We say, maybe you should have an intern who understands that this lean process, for instance, who will maybe go out and talk with potential customers and kind of do some surveys and gather information or go explore new markets. Perfect example of a little downtown company. This isn't in Wisconsin, but one I'm familiar with in Kansas that, you know, wanted to expand. So the state said, we want to expand the space in your retail store downtown. She said, great. She hired what we call a strategic research team to go out and explore markets. Well, what they explored was not the markets to add more retail space. They increased her business online by increasing access that people had to her businesses. They did a research. They said, look, most of your business in the fall mm-hmm. comes from New England, and most of the business in the spring comes from the Southwest. Why is that? What are you doing? So look at that information. She took that information and adjusted it. She's doubled the size of her business downtown, but you know what it is? It's space in the back. It's storage space for her online business. Now, that online business is attracting people to come to her store because of the notoriety that it's getting. So she's getting more traffic in, but that little piece of information about understanding who your customers are, why they're coming to you, when are they coming to you, mm-hmm. that's all, that's data, that's information, that's intelligence to kind of understand, and then what's the next round? What do you take that and go to the next thing? And that can be done by students and faculty learning how to be really good at information purveyors for businesses.
Well, final question. You presented to the Regents, you planted some seeds. Did their eyes get wide? Are they buying in? And would it take a pretty profound shift in the traditional level of services that our UW system faculty provide to come up alongside these small businesses and help them grow?
I think they were interested. This sparked some new thought, this idea. This idea of economic development. I mean, I'm not talking about working with faculty or students. I'm working with businesses. And that's a little bit different for them to get their hands around, their heads around that. So I think it just started to spark the idea with them. Maybe we should begin to understand what's happening in this economy and look for different ways to kind of begin. They're doing so many great things in the system with the D2P program and all the startup activity and the small business development centers that are out there. There's a lot of good work already going on. I'm just suggesting that we shift and begin to think about balancing out how we look at these things and begin to say, this is happening. This idea of growth companies and that growth company sector and building that out a little bit is a new way to approach our economic development strategy.
And as our larger companies get smaller, they offload some of these services, so they're more willing to let a consultant, a small business, come in and do it. Yeah. So do you think there was a lot of potential in some of these stage one companies that have exploded in Wisconsin?
Sure. I think particularly to do business with other larger companies and to be, you know, suppliers for those larger companies, depending on what they're doing. Absolutely.
Excellent. Mark Lang, thank you so much for a fascinating discussion.
Well, my pleasure. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.